Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, your community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. George Zimmerman, the killer of Florida teen Trayvon Martin, was granted a $150,000 bail during a bond hearing. During the hearing, Zimmerman offered what the Martin family characterized as a self-serving apology. Also during the hearing, the state's attorney presented a preliminary showing of evidence to back its second-degree murder charge and to prevent George Zimmerman from going free. The hearing raised questions about what actually occurred the night Trayvon Martin was killed by George Zimmerman. But what really happened? Well, a provocative short film reenacting the facts and theory of the killing has sparked a great deal of interest on YouTube and other social networking sites. Today, the independent filmmaker joins me. Joining me this morning via telephone from Atlanta, Georgia, is Mike McMahon, an independent filmmaker and video production specialist from Neptune, New Jersey, now living in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike first studied media production at New Jersey City University and graduated from the Art Institute of Atlanta. He is also a youth minister and dedicated mentor, as well as founder of a youth ministry called God's Young Men at Redemption Community Church, where he is a lay minister. I should also mention that Mike is a longtime friend. In fact, his wife sang at my wedding 20 years ago, and I am certainly glad that Mike is joining me this morning. Mike, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
The film, the short film that you put together of the killing of Trayvon Martin was absolutely remarkable, a very emotional video, and I think it captures the essence of what people believe actually happened based on the available evidence that that made it to the public. And I, of course, as many people do, realize that Trayvon Martin has impacted millions of people around the country. But this video took time and effort to put together. What was the spark, that impetus that led you to pick up the camera and begin filming?
I have to say it was God, man. You know, he put it on my heart heavily, and it was like I couldn't get any rest until I initiated the whole production. As you may know, I'm a youth minister, and cases like these I follow all the time. I was actually aware of the Trayvon Martin case before it became national news. Mm-hmm. I had been following it, but it was devastating to me when they finally released the 911 calls. That really impacted me. You know, I cried in the last month. I cried twice, and one, the first time was when they released those calls, and the second time was when Zimmerman was arrested and taken to jail like he's supposed to have been.
Right.
But it was like I had been put in a situation before, and I wasn't obedient to God, and I regretted it, and I always thought, well, what would have happened if I would have just responded? So this time, when he put it on my heart to do it, I said, I'm going to do it. No questions asked. It was very discouraging. My first actor to play Zimmerman didn't show up to the shoot the first night. We had several things to go wrong, but through it all, I was like, okay, we're going to get this done. The first night, we actually shot in a Texaco here in Atlanta, and that was the night, that was that Friday night of the Mega Millions. Mm-hmm. And when I got clearance to shoot in there, it was empty, but when we came back to shoot, it was just full of people nonstop getting their Mega Millions. And you can see them actually in the film. You can see some people right by the door filling out their Mega Millions cards. But I didn't give up, and I'm glad I didn't. I had doubts and discouragement the whole way, but, you know, the end result is that, you know, it was a film that I think is very provocative, and it gets people to think and talk about the case.
Did the folks there have any idea of what you were actually shooting? Did you indicate to them what you were doing, what the project was about?
Yes, I did indicate to them, but one is a Hispanic guy, and the other is a guy from Africa. They were nonchalant about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't really aware of the case or impacted by the case, you know, as much as we were, of course.
Right, right. Now, take us through the video. One of the things that you mentioned just a few minutes ago was the fact that it impacted you. It was emotional. And that really was captured in the video, particularly with the music in the background. Obviously, that is a classical piece, and I certainly enjoy classical music. But it really undergirded the emotional impact of the film. So take us through and what people will see when they get an opportunity to see the video.
Okay. Well, first of all, that piece is not really a classical piece. It's an interpolation. That, mm-hmm. My son created that. My oldest son played that music for the film.
Okay.
But yes, but what you will see is What the idea of it was to just pretty much make a visual, according to the facts that were available, a visual of what happened leading up to the shooting. Mm-hmm. And what you will see at first is just, you know, a kid walking into a store, buying what he bought, coming out of the store, walking through the gate, going into his through his gated community where his father lived. And then we got it with the actual George Zimmerman 911 call and interpolated transcript of what the girlfriend said was going on the phone. We are actually giving a visual of what happened from both perspectives, him riding in the car following Trayvon and also Trayvon walking down the street, you know, concerned that this guy was following him. And it basically just lays out the facts with an intention that any sane mind can pretty much put together what the cause of the whole thing was.
Right.
Now, whether or not Trayvon fought or, you know, anything else really is irrelevant when you think of the fact that he was actually profiled, as the prosecutor says, mm-hmm. and followed, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and perhaps provoked. Now, that we don't know. So the film pretty much takes you through the 911 call up until the point where George Zimmerman says, okay, when the dispatcher tells him, do not, you know, we don't need you to follow him. Then the visuals are kind of obscured a little bit so that you can tell that these are two different theories of what may have happened. And at first we see Trayvon attacking George Zimmerman and banging his head to the ground. I got a lot of flack from people for inserting that in there.
Well, let me stop you there, because yeah. I thought that was a brilliant perspective, because Zimmerman, of course, and his supporters have given his side of the story. So it wouldn't have been an appropriate way of filming if you didn't add that perspective.
Exactly. As a filmmaker, and also you can even consider sort of like video journalism.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have been, and that's what I was afraid of. I was afraid that if I didn't do that, because it was not initially part of my concept for the film, but it came upon me that if I did not do it, then a lot of people would dismiss the whole film as not having merit because
right.
it didn't address that.
Right. Now, the specific facts of the case have yet to emerge. I mean, obviously, we're still working off of what has been trickling out. Of course,
right.
the 911 recordings are available. A host of witnesses have provided the special prosecutor with other details. But supporters of Zimmerman still insist that he has his side of the story. So when you piece this whole thing together, talk about how you came to the conclusion that you actually had to put both elements, what people believe Trayvon actually had to endure, and of course, what Zimmerman is actually saying.
Well, when you listen to the two sides, of course, they always say there's two sides to every story. You really feel that, you know, there's just not a whole lot of middle ground.
Right.
You know, it either went one way or another. And it could be, I don't like to speculate. And that's the reason why we just pretty much included the two main theories. But again, first of all, I have to say this, that my actor who plays Zimmerman has hair on his head, you see, and it was mm-hmm. after the fact that we learned, of course, with the video that was released by the police department that he was actually bald.
Mm-hmm.
So my main intention was to make sure that his side of the story was addressed.
Right.
Secondly, I was hoping that anybody with a little bit of sense, you know, and I'm not, you know, making fun of anybody who supports Zimmerman.
Yeah,
that is their choice. But you should be able to put together that, you know, it's very unlikely that that's happened. And I've had a few responses to the video that I got exactly what I was looking for, which is, you know, that's pretty much satire. Because, first of all, when somebody's bald-headed, it's hard to kick their head and slam it repeatedly against the ground. How can you do that?
Right.
You have nothing to grab.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that I wish I could change about the video, is that, you know, the guy who plays Zimmerman had hair. But even still, you know, we gave him his side because, you know, you have to in order to be accepted as being fair, you
yeah.
know, and not biased.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the video is biased because, you know, whether or not Trayvon turned around and attacked him or whatever, it's still a matter of you put this kid in a position where he had no choice but to stand his ground.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So even when I show the Trayvon perspective, when Zimmerman, you know, attacks him, that's not exactly how I feel it could have happened. But again, at this point, I didn't want to put too many wild theories and speculations into the film, you know?
Well, you know, I actually have to say this. The gentleman that plays Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, they did a remarkable job, but interestingly, their facial and bodily features are eerily similar.
Yes.
How did you accomplish that?
Yes. Well, with the Trayvon Martin, it was on purpose, because this kid, even though he's a little younger, and again, this was before we found out that Trayvon was actually 6 foot and some inches.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid, that kid that plays Trayvon Martin, it goes to my church.
Okay.
And when they first released the picture that has become the iconic picture of Trayvon with the gray hoodie, the black and white, when they first released it, I immediately said, this kid looks like, you know, Trayvon Martin.
Right.
And I immediately approached his mother when the film was becoming inevitable in my mind. I immediately approached his mother, and she was with it. He does look a lot like him now. I wasn't able to capture it exactly, because first of all, this kid, you know, in the picture, Trayvon has a little afro, and this kid always has a little afro on his head. But then we went to shoot, he gotten a haircut. And I told his mother, you let his hair stay nasty all year long. And then when I go to shoot the film, you make him cut his hair.
Right.
But he does look a lot like him. The George Zimmerman was pure coincidental.
Wow.
We were shooting the store scenes at the Texaco again, and in walks these three Hispanic people, one of which is the guy who plays Zimmerman in the film.
Mm-hmm.
They just walked onto the set while we were shooting the store scenes, and one of my cameramen said, hey, this guy looks like him. And they said I should approach him. So they were getting their car about to pull off, and I came outside, and I asked the guy, I said, are you interested in playing this part? You know, the actor that I had didn't show up tonight, and we need to get this done ASAP. And he was excited about it. You know, it was a godsend. Again, I really give God the credit for this film, because I really wouldn't have been, you know, it's so trite and people say it all the time, but I really wouldn't have done it on my own strength.
Yeah.
I was so discouraged, and I really, just didn't seem like they were going to come together. But I can give you like 10 stories that, you know, really proved to me that God was behind the making of this film. But the main one was that he sent a man that looked like Zimmerman to play.
Right, right.
You know.
Now, the video is receiving lots of positive reviews. I had an opportunity, of course, to see it both on Facebook and on YouTube. And there are already over 6,000 hits or views of the video. And I suspect that as more people begin to talk about this, that it's really going to blow up. How do you feel about that?
Well, I hope so. And I'm not saying that, you know, for vain, you know, from a filmmaker perspective,
mm-hmm.
I'm just saying I hope people do get a chance to experience it. You know, the first time I sat down and watched it put together, and I worked on it, the editing, for a week.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I sat down and watched it with my family, I really got it. You know, it was like, wow, I was moved. And I created it, you know.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing is that, you know, I don't have, like some of these other people do with their YouTube channels, they pay for redirection, meaning, you know, they cause a lot of people that traffic to come to their video or to come to their YouTube channel,
mm-hmm.
and they pay for their, you know, when you go on, when you log on to YouTube, you'll see their videos on the first page that comes up. And I haven't, you know, had the opportunity to do that. This has gotten over 6,000 hits just by word of mouth, you know, just by people sharing it and passing it on.
Well,
and that means a lot to me.
Well, you know, I first saw the video last week. So, I mean, from the moment of creation to actually this week, talk about how quickly, because this is quick, 6,000 hits within a week.
Yes. We're averaging basically 1,000 hits a day.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's overwhelming, but it is what I know that, when it's God's project, you know, anything is possible.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why I struggled on through it and created and finished it, because, you know, I knew that it would be widely accepted. I knew that it would get critical. I knew that it would draw a lot of the opposing views, you know, racist rants and everything on YouTube. I was looking forward to that, you know. But I am still of course, surprised that, you know, so many people have watched it and loved it.
Well, which, of course, brings to mind the question, are you concerned about the criticism that most conservatives have expressed thus far that there is a rush to judgment? After all, we've yet to see a trial.
Yes. No, not at all, because basically that goes hand in hand with what I believe is one of the things that's wrong with America, which is that, you know, of course, there's always a hint of there's a rush to judgment when it's, in fact, a white or a white mentality thinking defendant. Mm-hmm. But when it is a black defendant, it's like you are guilty until proven innocent every time, even if you're a dead body like Trayvon was. He was guilty. He's basically guilty until proven innocent. They're not interested in seeing George get convicted. What they're interested in seeing a trial bring out more dirt about Trayvon to justify what George Zimmerman did.
I'm
not concerned about that one bit because, you know, basically the facts are the facts. You can't take away from the fact that this man was following him. He pretty much damaged himself with the 911 call because you can see, and this is why he was charged the way he was charged, because you can tell just through what he's saying to the 911 dispatcher where his mind was.
And I can hear the passion in your voice as you talk about this case, and it really resonates within the film, and that for me is really brilliant. Talk a little bit about the gentleman that played Trayvon Martin and the gentleman that played George Zimmerman, because again, their performance is remarkable. Tell me a little bit about those two guys.
Yeah, well, the young Trayvon is Deion Morgan. He's again, he goes to my church. He's one of four brothers, and he basically, when he was approached, he wanted to do it so bad, and he had never acted before. But I tell you, it was his every take. Now, of course, you can only see the one take that was chosen for the film, but every single take was brilliant. He maintained a look on his face. Of course, we had a couple of outtakes where, you know, he started laughing, et cetera. But for the most part, when he was serious and he was focused on the film, every take was brilliant. I had a short little talk with him before, and I told him, you know why why directors consider Samuel L. Jackson so brilliant? We think of Samuel L. Jackson being the brilliant actor because of the passion and the intensity that he brings to each one of his roles. But directors love him because he has the uncanny ability to do every take the exact same way.
Right.
Down the facial, the way he looks, the way his hands are, you know, everything is done exactly the same way. And that is gold for a filmmaker, because when you go to edit things, it's hard to do it if at one point he has his head tilted to the left, or at the other point he's got his hand on his head, et cetera, et cetera. You can't match those shots up.
Yeah.
So having just a little bit of a talk to the young guy about little things that make actors brilliant, he absorbed them all and ran running with each one of them. He never stopped giving Trayvon a voice, and that's what was brilliant to me.
And the gentleman that played George Zimmerman, tell me a little bit about him.
Now, he also, again, he walked onto the set. You know, he is a character. He's very interesting as a person, as a personality. He had never acted before, not in a short film, I don't believe. But his brilliance was that I just gave him certain key lines that he took all his other emotions and built around.
Right.
For example, when he's driving, you see him say, "Now he's checking me out." All I told him to say was, actually, he's checking me out. You know, he came up with the whole emotions on his face when he says this, like, he's really looking at the kid like he could be a threat, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
When the dispatcher tells him, you know, do not, you know, we don't need you to follow him, and he says, okay, you know, all of that was him. I really, you know, I directed this film, but, you know, I give God the good credit for really producing it and making it happen, because I pretty much just gave the actors their marks, their lines, and there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue, which is, you know, we left the dialogue up to the 911 calls and also to, you know, the statement by Trayvon Martin's girlfriend, which we reenacted, of course. You know, that's not the actual audio from the girlfriend's telephone call.
Right.
My son's girlfriend did that for us. You know, we had to re-record that so that we could use it on YouTube.
Right.
There was a concern that is the property of ABC News and we couldn't use it, et cetera. So, I mean, but everybody brought a brilliant little piece to the film. Everybody.
Now, obviously, it's quite early to talk about this and perhaps even a little controversial, but because you're in film, I have to ask, do you think this story will eventually be told in larger venues like Hollywood? Does the Trayvon Martin murder have enough emotional heft and depth to be told on the silver screen?
Yes. Of course it is. Somebody commented on a video on YouTube that I better hurry up and make a feature version before Steven Spielberg steals my idea.
Yeah, and that was my question. This brilliant 8-minute video could actually emerge into a full feature film.
Yes, and if I had access to the parents and their blessing on it, I would do it myself.
Yeah.
It can definitely be done because, first of all, we're talking about Trayvon was a 17-year-old black boy. Whatever the reason that he was, you know, going to stay with his father for a little while, whatever, he has become an icon.
Absolutely, yeah.
He is not a 17-year-old black boy. He is an icon now, and he, more than likely, he has changed the world, because even if George Zimmerman walks, and I even hate to use those words, but even if he does walk, there are going to be people that think twice before they pull a trigger on an unarmed, innocent black kid again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's going to be repercussions. Now, you have people that, you know, want to ostracize, you have the conservative or whatever side that is, that want to ostracize Jackson and Sharpton for appearing, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it is something that is needed because people aren't paying attention.
Absolutely.
I think that this case is making people pay attention. And whether good or bad, you know, it's like one of those things that is duly noted.
Yeah. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left in the show. What are your impressions about Trayvon's parents, Tracy Martin and Sabrina Fulton?
I really think that they are a symbol of strength. They, first of all, come on, who can imagine losing a child like that, you know? And there are so many more details that I could not put into the film, like how long it took for the father to actually find out that his son was murdered when it happened right a few yards from his door, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many little details and facts like that I couldn't put in there, but that they had to endure. You know, we have to remember that, of course, you know, I mean, I would imagine that a lot of people, and probably perhaps including myself, going through something like this would just ball up and hermit themselves for a period of time.
And then, of course, there are individuals who have perhaps even some violent tendencies that would strike out in a violent way. So
yes.
I do think that the country has benefited from seeing two parents experience this level of tragedy, but still maintain a level of dignity and integrity. That is a huge blessing. Just one other question, and that is, you ended the video with a list of names of other victims. And I did, you know, I saw Sean Bell's name out from New York and a few others. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, Ron, because nobody else has yet. I have not yet had a comment about it. A couple of people have talked about it. They are a list of 10, about 10 names of victims that died in circumstances similar to Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are thousands. But I sifted through. At the ending, I was really struggling with how to end the film. And, you know, one idea was to have him type in a scripture, and maybe that would cause a lot of people to go and see what the actual scripture says. But this came to me, and I think it's the best way, because Trayvon Martin represents this happening over and over again. That's why it receives so much attention, because pretty much people are angry that this keeps happening and people keep getting away with murder.
Right.
And this is the reason why there's so much response. People think that it's just about Trayvon. It's not. It's about those names that you see at the end of the film, as well as thousands more. But two of those names, those deaths happened after Trayvon Martin. You know?
Yeah.
And I wish I could have put, you know, about 10 more up, but I didn't want to cloud the whole thing.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, when he writes, I am Trayvon Martin, they're all Trayvon Martin. The same thing happened to all of them. The young gentleman that was on the subway train in California, who was handcuffed and shot. You know?
Yeah.
And when the officer said he thought he was reaching for his taser. and shot him and killed him.
Yeah.
His name is up there. Oscar Grant, I believe his name
right.
is. And, so, you know, I wanted people to take a look at those names, the people who really care or concerned or was impacted by the film. Google each one and look at each story. And then you'll understand why the black people are so frustrated.
Absolutely. There are a bevy of cases out there that certainly deserve wide attention. We have just about 30 seconds left. Any other projects in the making?
Oh, yes. We got a couple that I'm working on. But for the most part, I am trying to determine which should be my first feature length. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at right now. I've got several. I want to do it right, though. So I'm just, you know, pray for me. I'm asking God to guide me the right way, because it is, after all for his glory.
Yes,
and I I'm just a vessel that he's using. So I try not to make any rash decisions. But be prepared to see things that are just as emotional and impactful as this one was.
If folks are interested in seeing your work, where can they go?
Go to youtube.com/MikeMcMahonX, MikeMcMahonX, or they can go to my website, which is mmxmultimedia.com, and the film is on the homepage there. And it could even be to see some other works.
Okay, well, we're going to post the video on our website, praisecharlotte.com, and certainly believe that folks will definitely be impacted. Mike, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9. We'll be back in a moment. Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. I'd like to again thank Mike McMahon for joining me via telephone from Atlanta, Georgia, to talk about his short film reenactment of the killing of Trayvon Martin. The film is an extraordinary work and really captures the essence of what people believe actually happened to young Trayvon. Brilliant, brilliant work. I would encourage you to see the video on our website, www.praisecharlotte.com. You can also see the video on YouTube entitled Suspicious: Why George Zimmerman Was Charged with the Murder of Trayvon Martin. Brilliant piece of work. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.